time to tell the neighbors that Charlie Evers Show is on. It's time that you can listen to eras long bygone. So email all your loved ones or call them on your phone and tell them Charlie Evers is on. It may be terminal wrinkles, it may be Hillary's hair, it may be on top of the courthouse, you bet old Charlie's there. You may be invited to dinner, but tell them you can't come. The Charlie Evers is on.
Okay, we're back once again with Fred Malone, and we're talking about a lot of different things today. Fred, what about the Mohawk Historical Society? Boy, do they have a nice newsletter once again.
Get your January, February newsletter.
Yeah, it's in my backpack here.
Look through it. Yeah. Well, a lot going on, as you can see in there. There's a picture of the new building that we're in the process of building, and that's, as Kim says, is rolling along. The floor was poured. The roof is on. There's a little more masonry work to be done in front of the building, but they're working on the inside right now since the weather's been so good. Kim seems to think they'll have it done by spring, so we should be ready to open up again then. And there's going to be a, if you get a chance and go up to Sycamore at any time, the museum is going to be open again sometime in the spring. I'll get you the date whenever we get the new building done, but it's always open on Saturday, normally from 10 in the morning till 2 in the afternoon. But this new building is being built to look like a livery stable.
Right
above the oval on the door, it will say livery stable on it. Wow. And then the door will look like an old-fashioned livery stable door, but it'll be an automatic door that we can raise and lower to take big things into the museum.
Oh, no kidding.
So it'll give us more access, because the other two doors in the museum are small doorways, which make it really difficult when you got something big. And, of course, this building will be attached to the other two buildings of the museum, and will have an entryway on the inside where you can go from that building onto the rest of the museum, because you won't be able to enter the museum through this new building. You'll have to go through the other entrance, which is actually the middle building now. We changed the entrance around. It used to be in the building that was directly to the south, our south building. But we, when we did the remodeling here last year, a year ago, we moved that entrance to the middle building. So that's the way that'll be. But coming along, currently the museum is closed. Obviously, we closed during the winter time. And again, I'm not sure exactly when the opening will be, but probably sometime in late March or early April, they'll have things ready to go again. If this weather continues, you know, they'll be able to do a lot of the finish work and get that done. So hopefully that's what we're looking at. Mohawk historians, we're in our 27th year now, entering our 27th year of operation.
No kidding, not long.
It just doesn't seem like it's been that long ago.
And to think I gave the opening speech for
the museum. You did.
27 years ago.
Oh, in fact, and you did the rededication that
that's
we had
right.
About 10 years ago, I think it was.
Yeah.
When we rededicated. And hopefully you'll be able to come up and do the rededication when we get this new building going.
Oh, that's something.
But we're still only charging $10 a year to be a member. You get 6 newsletters a year. Most of the newsletters, Kim will glean all the area newspapers from the last couple of 100 years, and you get a lot of stories from the 1800s.
What he can do.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Oh, man.
And I've been known to submit an article once in a while, and we get some articles from other people occasionally. But we have members. I think right now our membership is, I want to say it's over 1,000, but we have members in almost all 48 states here in the country. And again, once you have reached your 80th birthday, your membership is free.
Amazing.
Yeah, you pay nothing, you still get the newsletter, and you're still a full member after you've attained that age of 80. So, so there are some pluses.
What are some of the, couple of the highlights of that museum as far as artifacts?
Well, we have a really nice collection of Indian artifacts or prehistoric Indian artifacts that courtesy of one particular family, and I won't mention the family because they have others at home, but a nice grouping of that. When Sycamore High School was still Sycamore High School and not the Mohawk High School, every graduating class in Sycamore had a pennant, a different type of a pennant, with the date of the graduation and a different look to it than the previous year. We have a complete collection of those, which goes clear back to the 20s, well, even further back than that. And I think we're only missing one or two. We have had duplications made of those, but we don't have the originals. That's another thing that's very interesting. We have an enormous collection of Sycamore memorabilia of itself. Kim has amassed a fantastic collection of postcards and photographs over the years. So that's another highlight. There's a nice collection of memorabilia from the First National Bank in Sycamore, which was started in 1919 and just celebrated our 100th anniversary last summer, 2019. So we got a nice collection of that. Beyond that, just a lot of great history from the Mohawk School District, which of course encompasses three different counties, Seneca, Wyandotte, and Crawford, because the school district is fairly large.
That's right.
So that takes in places like Benton and Dunquot, which used to be called Petersburg.
Oh, is that right?
And of course, Melmore and some of those areas. So.
I often wonder how Dunquot got its name.
Well, there's a story to that. It was an Indian name, and there's a story to it. Escapes me right now, but it's actually had more than one name over the years. Petersburg was one of the other names, and I think that that obviously came before Dunquot, and I believe there was a name, even another town name even before that. But there's a lot of little towns scattered around the Mohawk School District area. Of course, Belle Vernon, which is on State Route 67 there, just on the other side of Sycamore.
That's right.
We mentioned Dunquot. We mentioned Melmore.
Plankton.
Plankton, right, yep. Benton.
Lemert,
yep, all those. So the school district takes, I forget how many square miles the school district takes in, but again, parts of Crawford County, Seneca County, and Wyandotte County. In fact, Seneca County, it runs almost all the way up to State Route or U.S. Route 224,
no kidding.
The school district is. Yeah, if you're familiar with that area where the Mohawk Country Club is, on State Route 231, the school district actually goes up almost to the Mohawk Country Club. Yeah, so takes in a lot of area.
Sure does.
A lot of area. When I was coaching Little League Baseball, which I did for 12 years there while I lived in Sycamore, a lot of my kids were from Crawford and Seneca County because they were part of the Mohawk School District.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
And that abuts the Wyandotte.
Yep, right. And, well, actually, McCutcheonville is part of the Mohawk School District, too. For a number of years, the elementary school building over in McCutcheonville, the kids would go, in Sycamore, they would go to the school from kindergarten to grade 5, and then they were all bused to McCutcheonville for grade 6. And then they, of course, would come back and go to the high school, which had the junior high there in that building. So that school has been torn down. So there's actually no school in McCutcheonville anymore. But my son went to the sixth grade in McCutcheonville, and he graduated from Mohawk in 95, I believe it was.
Okay. Yeah, so. Do you have any idea about activity at the Overland Inn?
Well, that is under the auspices of the Wyandotte County Historical Society.
Yes.
So I know they're closed for the season also. They'll probably reopen. I think they're only open on weekends during the season. They just got over there, just came on board. I get the newsletter from the Wyandotte County Historical Society, which I'm also a member of, and I just got their newsletter not long ago, and they have a new curator. A lot of things going on up at the Wyandotte County Museum. When spring starts, they have their big Thursday night programs. Those usually start, I think, in May. Two Thursdays every month, they'll have a guest speaker in. I've spoken up there a couple of times. And I think I think they're going to have me back up there this year, and I'm going to portray Richard Nixon for them.
Really?
And I've also talked to the program director up there about having Warren Harding come up and speak to their group. Those are held there at their museum on 8th Street. And if you've never been there, that's a wonderful museum.
It's in
an Italianate home there that's been refurbished. And they also have a one-room schoolhouse on their property just adjacent to the museum. Nice facility.
Is that behind the museum?
Kind of behind and, let's see, to the north
okay.
of the museum. On the same property there, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. But that nice facility. But Overland Inn, I'm not sure when it opens. And, of course, and they also sub-manage the Indian Mill. It's part of the Ohio History Connection property.
Right.
But the Wyandotte County Historical Society, I think, helps to man that.
Oh, that's
too,
good.
So,
yeah. yeah.
And that's been refurbished, too, in the last several years. So yeah. if you've never been to that, that's accessible off of State Route 67. If you come off of State Route or of U.S. Route 23,
There's a
sign there where you turn, you actually go off of 53, and then 67 is off of 53, and then there's a county road that accesses the Indian Mill, and it's not too awfully far from, once you get on 67 and head towards Sycamore, it's only about a mile or so down the road, but that's a nice facility there.
It sure is, and the benches, I'm sure they're still there, were made out of wood that I pulled from the Sandusky River from an 1818 dam. And I still have one of the wooden pegs that held that dam together. Yeah. yeah. And quite interesting, but the ladies of the Historical Society finished and had a wonderful job done on those boards going clear back to 1818.
Well, there's a cofferdam there.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, over the years, a few people have lost their lives at that cofferdam trying to kayak or canoe down through there and getting caught, you know, and you're caught underneath that current and you can't escape.
That's
you
right.
just can't
That's
get right. out. In fact, I think the last was maybe a few years ago. We had a couple people die there at that cofferdam. So.
Yeah, I remember canoeing up there and getting fairly close to that and got out of its way as fast
yeah,
as
yeah yeah you don't want to Ooh. Try to attempt to go over one of those things
no.
because or you don't want to swim anywhere near that area because if that pulls you under you're a goner.
You're a goner, yeah.
You just can't fight your way out,
right?
The current's too strong. But getting back to the Mohawk Historical Society, you can become a member of the Mohawk Historical Society. I will give you the address, and again, like I said, it's only $10 a year, and if you just send a check to the Mohawk Historical Society, Post Office Box 336, Sycamore, Ohio, 44882, they will gladly sign you up as a member, and you will start getting a newsletter immediately. It's published six times a year. It's just a fabulous newsletter
for your history.
Yeah. And as I said, there's oftentimes there are stories that tie into Marion, parts of Marion County
right.
too.
So, right.
But you're getting a lot of history in the newsletter. And again, that is Mohawk Historical Society, Post Office Box 336, Sycamore, Ohio, 44882. They do have a Facebook page, and I don't do Facebook, so I'm not on there very much. But if you just type in Mohawk Historical Society in Facebook, I'm sure you can come up with their Facebook page.
Okay.
But every newsletter, Kim also has a feature of famous Ohioans.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of great stories in there about people that have came from Ohio. This month's newsletter is on Chief Pontiac, who was born in Ohio and, of course, played a significant part of our early history. He was born in 1720 and died in 1769, so he would have been part of that great migration into the Northwest Territory that took place back in those days. So, and on the front of this newsletter, he has Seneca County, a history of the Seneca County Indians. And that those composed of the tribes of the Senecas, the Cuyahogas, the Mohawks, and the Oneidas, however you particularly pronunciation of it. And that was a very interesting article as well. But the information that's provided in this newsletter is very well worth the $10
a
member.
Oh, boy.
And, of course, that would gain you membership to the museum at any time you choose. And also, if you get this newsletter, you get the information about all the wonderful programs that we put on up at the old Opera House in Melmore.
Oh, yeah.
And we've had some fantastic programs up there. We've even had the new Christy Minstrels at that.
Isn't that something?
And they, of course, put out a lot of albums back in the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And they're actually back. They reassembled, and they're back performing again, new Christy Minstrels.
And another performer that came to McCutcheonville was
you're thinking of the hobo
in the newsletter.
Yeah, the hobo guy. What was his name? Oh shoot.
This was a younger Ozzy and Harriet.
Oh, Ozzy and Harriet, yeah.
One
right.
of their kids.
Right, right. Ricky Nelson.
Ricky Nelson, that's it.
I was
McCutcheonville performing.
Yeah. At the old Hollow Inn.
Which is now gone. Yeah.
It's now gone. But the old Hollow Inn on Route 53, just north of McCutcheonville. Used to have some big names in there. Well, I think Loretta Lynn appeared there before.
Really?
And what was the guy that he was the hobo that traveled around and I can't think of his name. But I think Willie Nelson appeared there at one time. A lot of very famous people went to the Hollow Inn.
No kidding.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's something.
But the mission statement for the Mohawk historians is to preserve, promote, and protect the history of our great Mohawk area.
Yeah. Great.
So we would appreciate any support that anybody out there listening for $10 a year, you can become a member of that wonderful organization. And as I said, it's absolutely well worth the 10 bucks a year just to get the newsletter. And it's like a, 12 page newsletter.
Oh, yeah.
Almost every newsletter comes out. It's 10 pages.
Hey, Scott, I bet you cannot guess what my favorite type of animal is.
Cats?
No, dogs. Now, can you guess what my favorite type of dog is?
Black lab.
No, golden retriever. Was there any doubt?
WWGH Radio, 107.1 FM, The Talking Place.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Okay, we're back once again with Fred Malone.
Charlie, I mentioned it to you. I wanted to kind of just to give people a little sample of some of the things that you'll find in this newsletter. It's not all things just about the Mohawk School District. Kim comes up with some pretty interesting things to put in here to keep it interesting. Under a heading of called Neighborhood News. There, you know, Ohio, as well as other states in the Union, years ago had some pretty weird laws on the books.
You said it, yeah.
I know we've got some here in Marion County. I've talked about them before, but here's a list of the 20 weirdest laws in Ohio, and they're in order of 20 down to 1. Number 20, in North Canton, it is against the law to roller skate without notifying the police.
Really?
Did you know that?
Yeah.
Number 19, in Lowell, Ohio, it is unlawful to run a horse over 5 miles an hour. Number 18, it is illegal for more than 5 women to live in a house in the state of Ohio.
My goodness.
Number 17, in Oxford, Ohio, down near in Miami County, it is illegal to drive around the town square more than 100 times in a single session.
Oh, boy.
I wonder if that would be the same for here in Marion when people would
shoot the loop,
yeah.
Or anywhere, yeah.
Or anywhere. Number 16, in Bay Village up around Lake Erie, it's illegal to walk a cow down Lake Road.
Wow.
So don't put your cows there. Yeah. Number 15, it's illegal to get a fish drunk anywhere in the state of Ohio. Number 14, in Akron, Ohio, it is illegal to display colored chickens for sale.
Hmm.
So I guess that means around Easter time, you can't dye those poor chickens' colors. Number 13, women are prohibited from wearing patent leather shoes in public.
Now
is that because patent leather shoes shine up? Reflect
that. Could very well be.
Number 12, in Ohio, if you ignore an orator on Decoration Day to such an extent as to publicly play croquet or pitch horseshoes within 1 mile of the speaker stand, you could be fined $25.
Wow.
Number 11, in Fairview Park, it's against the law to honk your horn excessively. Number 10, participating or conducting a duel is prohibited in the state of Ohio. In McDonald, Ohio, number 9, your duck may not be paraded down Ohio Avenue. I suppose it's okay everywhere else.
Yeah, probably.
Number 8, in Youngstown, Ohio, riding on the roof of a taxi cab is not allowed. Number 7, also in Youngstown, Ohio, you may not run out of gas. I guess you can be fined for that. In Columbus, Ohio, it's illegal for stores to sell cornflakes on Sunday.
Good grief.
And the top 5. Number 5, in Toledo, Ohio, throwing a snake at anyone is illegal. So if you catch that snake in your
basement,
don't pitch it at anybody.
Yeah, right.
Number 4, it's illegal to kill a house fly within 160 feet of a church without a license.
Oh, my.
Now, these are legitimate laws books.
You wonder what...
At one time.
How they were promoted.
And how were they enforced?
Yeah.
Number 3, in Paulding, Ohio, a policeman may bite a dog to keep it quiet.
Wow. Oh, my.
Glad I was never a cop in Paulding. In Canton, Ohio, number 2, if one loses their pet tiger, they must notify the authorities within 1 hour.
Oh, boy.
And number 1, crazy laws. In Ohio, it's illegal to fish for whales on Sunday.
On Sunday?
And that reminds you'll find in our newsletter.
Yeah, but that reminds me of, was it in the Marion Star today, a picture of the beluga whale shaped airplane. Of course, one landed in Mansfield the other day, a smaller version
right,
of it.
Absolutely, yeah.
And I remember when I was in Panama at the airfield there along the canal, I saw that smaller beluga whale looking ship that hauled the rocket engines.
I saw something the other day. I can't remember what I was watching. It was one of those educational programs,
yes,
on one of the off networks, and they were talking about the shuttle launchings, and they featured the crawler.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
Yeah,
were featuring close the crawler. Up and
talked about it, and
except they never said where it was made.
No, they didn't. That was the unfortunate part about it.
Oh boy, just look at those treads and the fact that we have one of those treads in there.
Yeah, out at the Huber, and I don't know whether I've got the date for that or not, but this year is part of the bicentennial. It's going to be in May. Let me see if I wrote that down. I don't have the date for it, but when I come the next time, I will. But out at the Huber Museum on a Saturday, they're going to have an open house. I think it's going to be from 1 to 4, and Mr. Huber's going to be there.
Okay.
And you'll be able to talk to Mr. Huber about his contribution to Ohio and the world with Huber Manufacturing.
Yeah. Interesting. So
there'll be people there to take you through the museum. You'll be able to wander through the museum. And that's going to be part of the bicentennial presentation.
Well, I'm glad their membership is not fading away. It's increasing.
Well, it seems to be, yeah. And I think having this track brought in last summer from the crawler has helped to make that a point of destination for people.
I would think
to be able to see that.
I think I told you how that came about. I was down in Newark, Ohio, and Terry Klein and I went down to talk to the NASA people because we're getting the NASA display in Marion. And I told the man, I said, you know, the crawler transporter was made in Marion. He said, I didn't know that. He said, you know, we've got an old crawler tread that we could probably loan to you for a while. And that's how it all came about.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I'd like to know the weight of that thing. I never hear anybody say what the weight was.
It's close to a ton, isn't it?
Or more.
Yeah.
I knew they had to bring it on a flatbed.
But it's amazing. They had to go get it.
Well, just think of when it was built and the amount of manpower it took just to build that thing.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, and then to transport it, obviously in pieces, down to Florida to be used.
To be
reassembled and used.
And most of those engineers are passed away now.
And do I understand this correctly, that there was a duplicate made of it for spare parts?
I don't really know.
Well, I've heard that, but I didn't know how true it was.
I think there were two of them, yeah.
Yeah.
But, and they continually update because, you know, things happen.
Well, you know, and it's of course, it's still being used.
Not just
to haul the shuttle out because they're not using the shuttle anymore, but it's still being used to haul different rockets and so forth.
1 mile an hour.
Yeah, right. Oh, not going to break any land speed records with that.
That's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I had one more thing I wanted to read from the newsletter that I thought was really, really funny this time. And it's, I don't know where Kim got this, probably out to some newspaper, but it's a little story here which has kind of a funny ending, and I thought it was cute. So starts out, it says, "Bless me, Father, for I have sinned." Obviously, someone's in a confessional,
yeah.
Right? He said, "I have been with a loose girl." The priest asked, "Is that you, little Joey Pagano?" "Yes, Father, it is." "And who was the girl you were with?" "Well, I can't tell you, Father. I don't want to ruin her reputation." "Well, Joey, I'm sure to find out her name sooner or later, so you may as well tell me now. Was it Tina Minetti?" "Oh, I cannot say." "Was it Teresa Mazzarelli?" "Oh, I'll never tell." "Was it Nina Capelli?" "I'm sorry, Father, but I cannot name her." "Was it Kathy Priano?" "My lips are sealed, Father." "Was it Rosa D'Angelo?" "Then, please, Father, I cannot tell you." The priest sighs in frustration. "You're very tight-lipped, and I admire that, but you've sinned and have to atone. You cannot be an altar boy now for 4 months. Now you go and behave yourself." Joey walks back to his pew, and his friend Franco slides over and whispers, "What'd you get?" "4 months vacation and 5 good leads."
Yeah, that's good. But, yeah.
And you were an altar boy at one time.
Oh, I sure was, yeah. And I can remember our priest was so hard of hearing, he held up his receiver to the window.
So he could hear.
Yeah. And
you still had to talk loud.
Yeah, you had to talk loud and the whole church could hear it.
Well, and it's all changed now, Charlie. Now there's no wall in between.
Oh.
You go in the confessional
face to
and
face.
You're face-to-face with the priest.
Uh-huh.
It's much different than it used to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. I can still smell. Our Father Reinhardt was a cigar smoker.
Oh, yeah.
And I can still remember his breath smelled like cigars.
We had down in Logan, we had there were two priests there, and Father Foy was the old priest, had been there forever, and he smoked cigars and liked to drink wine, and you could always smell the cigars and the wine on his breath. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Those were the days,
yes,
Charlie.
They
those
sure
were the days.
Were. And more days are coming up.
Yeah. but anyway, that's pretty much what's going on with Mohawk. And again, if you're interested in becoming a member, $10 a year, we'll get you a membership. And we'd like to increase our membership. Obviously, we don't depend much on our membership fees anymore to keep the museum running. We were so fortunate enough a number of years ago to get that bequest from that individual that was a graduate of the old Sycamore High School. And we've invested wisely, and we get a nice yearly check from our investment, and of course we used a lot of that money to obtain the old opera house over in Melmore and to build this new building to our museum and completely remodel the existing museum, and our board of directors, our board of trustees have done a wonderful job in being a good steward to that, and I'm fortunate enough to have been named a director emeritus a couple of years ago, which I am proud to be a part of still. We just lost one of our other director emeritus. There were 4 of us, and we're down to 3 now. But we just lost Clarence. Now I can't remember his last name. Had the hardware store. Keller, Clarence Hardware, passed away this past year. And so he was a member from the beginning. And in his 80s, you know, late 80s, you know, it happens. But anyway, those are some of the things that are going on up there.
Well, is there a book published yet of all of these newsletters?
Yes. A number of years ago, Kim compiled a number of the newsletters into a book, and we still have those available. In fact, I think I gave you one of them.
Okay.
I think Kim gave you one. But I think he's working on another one. It's going to be a sub to that.
That's good.
And we also have a couple of books that we published a number of years back that are compilations of photographs that Howard Mick took over the years. Howard Mick was a lifelong resident of Sycamore. He was in World War II. He was a former postmaster in Sycamore, and he always had a camera in his pocket.
No kidding.
He was constantly taking pictures of everybody. I'm in the book a few times, one of the books. But we compiled those photographs, and we have those books also that are available at our museum. Yeah.
You know, it's amazing. My dad always had a camera. He had one of the bellows, Kodak bellows type, you know, you pulled out.
Right.
And thanks for that, I've got pictures from the 1930s, you know, say 1937 on up to almost the present time.
And you don't see people doing that anymore.
No, you don't.
That's kind of a lost art. Of course, everybody takes pictures on their phone,
but they
don't actually go develop them.
That's right. What do you do after you take them? Yeah.
I think my wife's got about 2,000 on her phone.
Yeah, I think. I don't know. Can you go to Walmart?
Yeah, you can. You
have
can
it downloaded.
Yep, you can. We do that occasionally.
Of course, it break you up.
Well,
you can pick and choose.
Yeah, it's not horrible. You pick and choose the ones you want. We actually did that with our Christmas card this year. We made a Christmas card that we sent to our family that had pictures that were taken off of her phone.
Right.
So, you know, but in the old days, you took a roll of film and you developed that roll of film and you had those photographs.
Right. Yeah.
And you had negatives.
Yeah. I remember
pictures.
My dad occupying a closet on our second floor of our house and made a dark room out of it. I can still remember his red light.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he developed and enlarged pictures. And then he, Scott, you know I love fruitcake so much that for me it's not just a Christmas dessert.
Oh, Charlie, I would not want it any time of the year.
Oh, Scott, you've not lived until you've had mashed potatoes and fruitcake. Birthday fruitcake, graduation fruitcake, cream of fruitcake, and oh, the possibilities are endless.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM, don't miss it.
/180/111, and I had a stroke. I couldn't speak. I'd walk.
150/90, and I had a stroke.
This is what high blood pressure sounds like. You might not feel its symptoms, but the results from a stroke are far from silent. Get back on your treatment plan or talk with your doctor to create a plan that works for you. Go to loweryourhbp.org.
Head to toe, everything's changed.
Brought to you by the American Stroke Association, American Medical Association, and the Ad Council.
Yeah, here we are, back once again. Yes, we'll be here till noon today, and that happens to be about 13 and a half minutes.
Yeah, if you've got any questions, call in. We'll try to answer them.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
My wife says I'm a wealth of useless information, so.
7403-39944.
I want to mention one other thing, Charlie, before I forget.
Yeah.
I mentioned the Big House Valentine's Bash over at Malabar coming up Valentine's Day weekend, but I wanted to mention we've got a winter hike for health over at Malabar Farm coming up on February the 8th, and it's from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Now, that doesn't mean you're going to be hiking for 3 solid hours. It's a kind of come and do on your own.
Oh, okay.
But you'll come to the visitor center, which, of course, is there at the top of the hill at Malabar, and you'll get you can sign in there. There'll be maps available, and refreshments will be available there in the conference room. And this is actually being co-sponsored by the Richland Public Health Division, and it's free. And there'll be people there to help you locate which trail you want to go on, and again, I said, provide you with a map, and the health department is going to be there with some refreshments and so forth. If you want additional information, again, you can go to malabarfarm.org and look that up, or you can call the information number, which is 419-774-4772. And that's 419-774-4772 or MalabarFarm.org. And again, that's February the 8th from 9 to 12, Winter Hike for Health. And maybe by that time we'll have some snow on the ground.
You never know.
one of the trails over there called the Jungle Brook Trail, just a one-mile loop, goes down through an area of the park that has a lot of different vegetation and a lot of different foliage in it, and it's part of it's through on a boardwalk. The boardwalk was just recently replaced about a year or so ago, so it's a nice hike for just about anybody. There's virtually no climbing involved in it. And then of course we have the Doris Duke Trail, which is back behind the big house, between the big house and the sugar bush. And that has a lot of outcroppings and a lot of, the cave is back there, and there's some waterfall back there. So there's various different trails. You can also hike the equestrian trails as well. So a lot of hiking available over there. But enjoy that day, even if it's not snow on the ground, still be a nice hike.
It sounds like it, yes.
That's about the only thing going on over at Malabar until we hit March. And, of course, the first two weekends in March are always the annual Maple Sugar Maple Festival.
Yes, yes.
Maple Sugar Festival. Yeah. And last year we tapped somewhere around 1,400 trees, and I think they're planning on
1,400.
I think they're planning on doing that again this year. Yeah,
Have syrup to sell.
Well, hopefully. We did last year. It was a particularly good year. The weather was very cooperative. We had those cold nights and those warm mornings and days, and that allowed the sap to flow. And so as a result of that, I forget how many gallons of syrup we made last year, but it was a good year.
Yeah.
Very good year.
It's always hard to have two good years in a row, but
it may happen. It is. And, of course, our goal at Malabar is to be able to produce enough syrup to supply all of the state parks in Ohio with syrup to sell.
That's right. That's
the goal.
That. Yeah.
In years past, we've had to buy some from the Vermont area in order to meet the demand. But we would rather produce it all here locally if we can. And but there again, you know, our weather in Ohio is not always as cooperative as it is in the Vermont area.
I guess once you get to Vermont, the weather pretty much stays.
Yeah, for maple syrup it does.
Yeah.
And of course there are a couple of other places over around Malabar Farm that produce maple syrup. There's one just down the road on Pleasant Valley Road that's an independent producer. Obviously he doesn't tap that many trees, but he usually has syrup. And there used to be a one right outside of Sycamore on State Route 103, very near Plankton, that produced syrup. But I think the patriarch of the family has passed away, and I don't think the family continued that. It's a lot of work.
They get too old, yeah.
It's a lot of work.
Oh, yes,
it's a lot of work. And, of course, now most of the larger producers are using the tubing from tree to tree and not using sap buckets anymore. But we do set up a few sap buckets at the park so that you can see how it used to be made or how it used to be collected. And it takes, 40 gallon of sap to produce 1 gallon of syrup.
And that's a lot
of sap. So that's a lot of sap.
But, boy, this syrup is so good.
Well, it is. And, of course, it has no artificial ingredients in it. It's 100% pure.
You know, it's interesting how once that syrup is produced, then it goes through a filter. Mm-hmm. And I often wonder what remains in that filter.
Well, I've seen some of the debris that comes out. And obviously, you're going to get some residue from the inside of the tree because that's where it's coming from.
Yeah.
Now, if you come to the park during the Maple Syrup Festival, we have a trail you can walk that shows you how the Indians produced the sugar. They weren't making sap. They were producing sugar. And, of course, they were doing it in a hollowed-out log using heated stones. So what happened a lot of times with the Indians and their use of the sugar over the years, because of the flakes that would come off of the stone and the debris from the hollowed-out log, they used to have a lot of problems with their teeth.
Number one,
they used a lot of sugar, which helped to rot their teeth.
Yes.
But also the particles from the rocks and the particles that came out of the the logs were hard on their teeth too when he rode their teeth away.
Amazing.
So
yeah.
Then if you go on down the trail, you'll see how the settlers then started using kettles and would boil the sap, which eliminated a lot of that other ingredients.
Whatever it is, yeah, it's kind of a brownish, yellowish.
Yeah, and of course now we use
teeny stone.
Now we use some modern day tanks that can get rid of all that stuff before it gets to you. So, and I have seen those filters, and they can get pretty grimy looking.
Yeah, it's really interesting. Yeah. The whole history and the whole process of making maple syrup is so good.
Well, and that's the whole part of coming to Maple Syrup Days at the farm is you can see the end production, the pioneers production, and then you can see how it's done today, and you can get to sample it. And we'll have anywhere from 2,000 to 4,000 visitors at the park in those 2 weekends.
Yeah, it's amazing.
It
I
is.
Remember a couple of years ago we were there and it was really cold.
Yeah, I used to do a character tramping around up through there. In the last couple of years, I've kind of given it up. My knees just won't hardly take it anymore because it's up in the Sugar Bush area, and that's pretty hilly up through
there.
Yes,
it is. Yeah. And I remember so much. A good friend of mine is the Indian. What's his name?
Oh, yeah. Moore.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, that's something.
Yeah, he portrays Tecumseh quite often.
Okay.
In fact, his picture was used for the oil painting that was done of Tecumseh that I think is in the Smithsonian Institute in Washington, D.C.
Wow.
Yeah, Roger Moore.
Isn't that something?
Moore,
yeah.
Right. And Roger lives right there on Hanley Road.
Oh, is that where he lives?
He lives,
okay.
You know, once you get up the hill past, if you come in on 13, go up the road, Hanley Road, and before you get down to Washington Road where you turn to pick up Pleasant Valley Road, Roger lives right there on Hanley Road before you get to the cemetery.
Wow.
Yeah.
I worked one whole day at the Plymouth, Ohio. We,
at the Tractor Festival, Silver King Tractor Festival?
Yeah. And he was with me and the blacksmith the whole day.
Oh, yeah.
And
right.
So I got to talk quite a bit.
Very interesting
to
person.
Him about his Vietnam
experiences. Yeah,
all the his terrible experiences.
Yeah. In fact, when you're going down Hanley Road, you'll know you're coming up to Roger's place because his name is on an Indian arrowhead plaque out on the front,
right?
Hanging from a post there. Moore.
Yeah.
So, and he has quite an extensive collection of artifacts.
Oh, okay.
And he's part Indian.
Yeah,
he's
that's
part
right.
Native
yeah.
American.
Sure
right?
is.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You bet.
His son also portrays a Native American with him at Maple Syrup Festival days. Roger and his son are there.
Yeah.
And his son, he's always got his face all painted up, and he has a ring through his nose. Yeah. He's quite and his haircut is actually, when you first see him, he's kind of breathtaking.
Yeah.
Kind
right.
of scary to look at
oh,
him.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Very nice guy, though. Very nice guy.
That's great.
And they know their history.
Yeah.
So anyway,
yeah.
coming up on first 2 weekends in March, and we'll talk more about that when I come back in March.
Okay. What about the Marion
February,
County Historical Society?
Well,
what's coming up there?
We are, of course, closed for the season, and the girls are frantically working on the new exhibit, which will open, most of it will be ready by the time we have Night at Heritage Hall, which is the last weekend in March, but officially will open the 1st of April. But the new exhibit this year will be tied to 1920.
Okay.
Of course, celebrating the election of Warren Harding to the presidency and all the hoopla that was going on in town in 1920.
Wouldn't it be something to be able to react or replay the hoopla?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It would be nice to find, and I don't know whether we have anything in our archives or not, but it would be nice to find some movie reels that showed some of the trains coming into Union Station and some of the crowds that were participating in listening to Harding give a speech up on the front porch. Now, I think if I just heard that we just had our executive committee meeting last night, and we were talking a little bit about this. I think they have had to... push back the opening of the Harding Presidential Center. I think it was going to be in March. I think it's now going to be sometime in April. I have to check on that and get the dates for you when I come the next time. They've had some slowdown a little bit.
Is there a house that's going to be torn down yet?
You mean the one where they have the office now?
Well, to the left of where you drive in.
Yeah, I think that's where they have the offices right now.
Okay.
I think that might be scheduled for demolition, only don't quote me. I don't know for sure. I haven't talked to anybody connected with it or not, but maybe I can find out some more information when I come back the next time. I did hear from, I think, our director or somebody on the in the group last night said something about that they'd been had to push it forward a little bit into or backward into April.
So what's a major thrust of the museum, do you know?
Our museum or the new museum?
The new museum.
I really can't tell you, Charlie. I'm not a part of that. I did hear that the Ohio History Connection has now taken over completely. I don't think the local college is involved now anymore.
MDC is not.
No,
involved.
I don't believe so. Oh. At least that's the kind of the word
really?
We got out. And if anybody knows that for sure, they can let us know. But I don't know what the major thrust is going to be once they open. I've not been privy to any of that information, so I can't help you there. As far as our museum is concerned, I think I might have mentioned this once before. We received a grant to do an oral history on Mary Ellen Withrow's career. That we're still taking pledges for that. It's a matching grant, so we had to raise X number of dollars. I think it was a $10,000 matching grant. We had to raise $10,000 to get $10,000. That's proceeding along well. We're still taking pledges and donations for that if you're interested, and that will preserve the history of Mary Ellen Withrow's career beginning here in Marion and going all the way to the U.S. Capitol. We also will be eventually obtaining everything that Mary Ellen has in her museum over at Primrose. Will eventually come to museum here. So more on that next month when I get here.
Excellent. Okay.
I think we're about out of time.
We got just about a minute to go. What section of Heritage Hall would she occupy her?
Well, I think right now what we're thinking about is taking the Harding Rooms and devoting one of the rooms of the Harding Room
downstairs
to Mary Ellen Wright. We have two rooms currently of Harding memorabilia, and with the new Harding Presidential Center opening up, I think we'll probably be loaning them some things from our collection, and we'll take one of the rooms and devote that to Mary Ellen.
Very good. Okay.
WWGH Radio 107.1 FM LP Marion, Ohio.